Yesterday's Concert is a proud member of the Pantheon Podcast Network.
Before we get started, the subject matter we're discussing today, albeit important to address, it can be difficult. If anyone listening can be triggered by harassment or sexual violence, please use caution before listening to this episode.
I would say I've seen probably 500-600 shows in general, concerts, but looking back on my experiences, I started to feel like shows were more uncomfortable than the idea where I was looking forward to it. It changed for me. I felt anxious in the anticipation, wasn't excitement. And I started to kind of look deeper into why I wasn't feeling the same way, and my passion had changed. And the result of that reflection was that there was a lot of groping, grinding, unwanted touching is a nice way to put it, you know, and everybody responds to trauma differently, and everybody's definition of what is bad, you know, that's different for everybody. But for me, it was happening frequently, everything from like comments to just like the groping, which I got to a point that I didn't want to see shows anymore.
Welcome to Yesterday's Concert, a podcast that celebrates live music. My name is Lance Ingram, and in this episode, we talk to Ashley Driscoll, founder of GrooveSafe. Ashley shares her personal story and her organization's mission to stop harassment and sexual assault in live entertainment. Grab your earplugs as we build better fan experiences for all. So I'm here with Ashley Driscoll, the founder of GrooveSafe. Ashley, how are you today?
Hi, I'm awesome. Thanks for having me. How are you doing?
It's a beautiful day in Memphis right now, and we haven't had many of those, so I'm kind of loving it. So it's kind of great. So it's a good thing.
You're lucky. It's snowing in Boston, but that's okay. Oh. Welcome a little bit of winter finally.
Well, as we were talking about earlier, if we had a little bit of snow in Memphis, we would effectively shut down and the whole city would crumble. So really not ready for that to happen. It's kind of nice to have power and water and all that good stuff. So no Texas fall apart.
And a little different there than it is in New England, I guess.
Yeah. Y'all got it right. But well, so I want to get into knowing you. I want to get to have a little fun before we get into this sobering conversation that we're likely going to have today. So I know you're a live music fanatic. You have a passion for this. And so I want to kind of get to know you and your fandom. So first question, what was your first concert?
My first concert. Okay. I think the first concert that I chose to go to, I feel like this is pretty wild. It was one of those radio, kind of pop radio concerts. I think it was Jam 94.5, which in Boston was like a kind of pop R&B sort of station. They did it was at the Garden in Boston. I feel like someone like Keith Sweat and like, you know, it was probably 1997. So I might've been in seventh grade, and like a couple of friends and I went. I think there might've been a parent chaperone, and a kid we knew at the time, his dad worked at John Hancock. So they had a suite. So, you know, us cool girls got invited. Well, I was not a cool girl. Let me just say that. But I thought it was super cool to get invited into this suite for a little while. And it was a radio concert, and it was a disaster. But when you're 12, I think that's pretty cool. And then shortly after, I went to New Edition in Worcester. Those were my first experiences in like concerts on my own. And they were like pop and hip hop. And like, that isn't really where I am these days. Yeah. But I think that's my first actual concert memory.
That's fantastic. I wasn't expecting that. And I absolutely adore that. It was Keith Sweat. That's a throwback if I've ever heard one. So fantastic.
Someday I'll look into it to show you that lineup is like LaBouche. And it was like whatever radio hits were like fall 97 in Boston, I feel like was possibly. Yeah. Well, I'll follow up with you because it's probably going to be pretty funny. Who else was there?
I can't wait to see this lineup. It's going to be the next When We Were Young festival. It's going to be headlining by Keith Sweat. And oh, gosh. Taking it to some good music now, what was your favorite concert that you've seen? What's one that really ranks up there for you?
I think that many people who were there will say the same thing, but the Dead 50 shows in Chicago, when Trinastasio played with the remaining members of the Dead was one of the most exciting, special, I think, experiences I've had in concert history for me. I actually did the Griffith tickets by mail where you draw on the envelope and send it in, and I scored 2 pit tickets each night to that Dead 50 show at Soldier Field. And I was really excited for that. I, you know, got the special tickets, and I'm pretty sure the art itself was up on like maybe Separate Music on a screen, or I can't remember exactly, but that was a really cool experience, kind of combining the Grateful Dead, who I've always, since I was right after that pop phase of mine, I was introduced to Dylan and the Dead when I was around 16. And that changed kind of my whole music palette. Mm-hmm. That kind of was a really special experience for me. And then obviously later on, 16, 17 years old, I started to learn more about Phish. So having that kind of combination was really, really, really cool for me.
That's awesome. So what artists have you seen the most?
I've seen just under 200 Phish shows.
Fantastic. When was your first Phish show?
Oh, what a story.
Tell me the story. Tell me this.
I could talk all day about this. My very first Phish show is a memory that most people don't like. It was Coventry in 2004. August 2004 was Phish's goodbye shows, the end of the 2.0 era, which people probably know exactly what I'm talking about. But if you don't, Phish was about to go on hiatus, and it is known to be one of the worst disasters in Phish history. But it was my first show. I was 21 years old. My friend from Virginia actually overnighted me 3 festival passes for free. So miracled my first show, and I got to miracle 2 other people. I walked into a friend's house on Cape Cod with tickets in the air and said, "Who wants to go to Phish?" Because I was on the Cape in Massachusetts, and it was in Vermont. So, you know, maybe 3 hours tops. And my friend Oliver jumped up and said, "Me, let's go. Josh has a car and a tent." I said, "Okay, let's go." So we went up that day. And like I said, I was 21. I was like, "Ooh, that looks fun. That looks fun. Let's do that. Ooh, this is good." I didn't know until much later that it wasn't a good experience for everybody. I did know there was crying and there was problems. And it was my first festival. It was my first Phish show. And I didn't have to walk at all. I had looked at the map ahead of time, because that's the kind of person I am. And I was like, "Oh, take the exit. And he was like, "No, dude, we have to go." I'm like, "Take this exit." Turns out we avoided the traffic, parked at a farm, and got a ride in the back of a pickup truck. You know, I threw the tent on one shoulder and my backpack on the other, and wrote down the address where the car was. And we got in the literal pickup truck. It was pretty heady.
Whoa. What a story. So when you saw Phish in 3.0, did you like, "Oh yeah, that was a really bad show"? Like, were you able to kind of get a better picture of Phish and their live performance?
I think so. My first show back was Fenway 09, which was just only a couple months after the return. So I'd waited 5 years to kind of have that experience again. And it was at Fenway Park. I was on the field. I'm from Boston. That was really super special too. And I had called Ticketmaster, and they're like, "No, we're sold out." I'm like, "Please just try again." I was on the phone at work, and she's like, "You know what? I just got 4 tickets on the field. Do you want them?" And I said, "Yes, I want them. Yes, I absolutely want them." And so seeing the band again was super awesome. Because I was still learning too, I didn't really know how bad any of Coventry was. So I guess I was just excited to see them again. I think it was more about what it was for me. Now, obviously, if you listen back, there's,
you can see a difference.
There's issues, but I didn't think of it that way. So, I mean, when you think about this band I've seen the most, it's definitely Phish. But yeah. And then from GrooveSafe, I've now partnered with them. So I think that my show count jumped significantly since 2021. Was already over 100, don't get me wrong, but I had the different perspective working the shows and being there in a different way.
Yeah, that makes a lot of sense. Well, that's a good kind of segue into our conversation. I mean, you're clearly a live music fanatic. You love participating in live music, and you've started this company about GrooveSafe. So can you kind of tell me the personal story of how you started GrooveSafe?
our mission is to stop unwanted touching and sexual assault and harassment in live music settings and live entertainment spaces. I mean, obviously, it's very emotional. It started for me being, I would say I've seen probably 500-600 shows in general, concerts by now. I think I did wrote it out once and it's over, you know, 50 artists or something. More than that, actually, right? But from festivals and everything. But looking back on my experiences, I started to feel like shows were more uncomfortable than the idea where I was looking forward to it. It changed for me. I felt anxious in the anticipation, wasn't excitement, I think is what I'm trying to say anymore. And I started to kind of look deeper into why I wasn't feeling the same way and my passion had changed. And the result of that reflection was that there was a lot of groping, grinding, unwanted touching is a nice way to put it. But the spectrum for me personally of the kind of unwanted advances is vast, you know, and everybody responds to trauma differently and everybody's definition of what is bad, you know, that's different for everybody. But for me, it was happening frequently, everything from like verbal comments to the groping, which as we talk, we can talk more about specifically kind of what did happen and what has happened. But I got to a point that I didn't want to see shows anymore. And I didn't think that was fair. I blamed myself a lot. Like, it's really fun to dress up and like look really cute or like, you know, kind of push the limits and stuff like that. And so it took me a while to sort of put it into perspective that it was not my fault and like that seeing shows should be fun and I shouldn't have to be constantly looking over my shoulder or feeling tense. That's what it really was, is I felt like my shoulders were like in my ears during the concert, which you're supposed to relax. The intention of doing something you enjoy is to enjoy it. Mm-hmm. So that's where it started to shift, I guess. Basically, like I said, all right, I shouldn't have to stop seeing music. So let's try to talk about it. So I went to online forums. I went to peers and friends and people in the fish community. And it turns out that, which I guess I figured, it wasn't only me who was having these experiences, but it was really hard for people to talk about it and didn't know how to talk about it. So sort of how Groove Safe was born is a grassroots kind of movement where we just started to talk about it. And my whole goal, obviously, is be great to completely stop that harassment and build culture and shift everybody's experience to be more positive, try to change those behaviors. But it's going to take a long time. But I think giving people a voice, and the biggest thing is how hard it is to talk about, even still with me now, like you can hear it in my voice. It makes me a little nervous because it's a big deal and it causes a lot of trouble and pain for people, but it's also can be intimidating because you never know the response you're going to get from this kind of a conversation. Cause typically historically it's just been, you know, hushed or brushed under the rug or like, oh, it's no big deal. You know, people have told me at tables at the concerts that I have partnerships with the band and the venue, oh, this doesn't happen here. And so it's kind of difficult, but I decided, you know, 2017 is when I launched to just go for it.
I appreciate you sharing your story like that. That's disheartening to hear. Do you remember the first time that you were conscious of this unwanted touching or comments or any? How young were you when this happened, when this started?
I mean, I definitely was trying to think about the middle time. So I don't remember the first time. I mean, in my life, you can't remember that, I don't think. Sure. Some people might. But I would say that you 100% know somebody who's experienced something that has been, I mean, obviously disrespectful, but something that has stopped them in their tracks when it comes to harassment or this kind of unwanted touching, either at a show or in their life. So unfortunately, it's a prevalent behavior issue. But for me, I can speak more on the one that kind of changed or like motivated me to push forward with the movement more than the first time, because I can't really remember that.
Do you mind sharing that story?
No, yeah, I can. This is the one that kind of is, I tell more than others because there's a lot, but some aren't that easy. I was at a concert. It was Phish, but you know, we fast forward to working with them. So obviously the artists can have an influence, but it's never anybody's fault. But it was at Northerly Island in Chicago. I was on the floor and I was dancing. And this can lead into more conversations too, because I was with my partner at the time, you know, a guy, boyfriend right next to me. And I was just dancing and I had a skirt on, probably knee length. And while I was dancing, the next thing I felt was somebody's hand up from behind underneath my skirt. And obviously I got startled and kind of,
yeah.
The thing in those scenarios sometimes is that you don't know who did it. And I didn't know who did it. I knew that it had happened, that they were gone because of do 360 and you look around and shocked and kind of speechless and whatever. But there was nobody there. So a couple of things in that intense thought process is my boyfriend's right here. He didn't do anything wrong. He didn't see it. And then also the idea that it can happen anytime, anywhere, so unexpected, because a lot of the conversations I have with people is they'll say, I have a crew, or I'm always with my boyfriend. He's 6X and he stands behind me, or, you know, I dance so hard that no one would ever approach me. But everybody has vulnerable moments and you don't really know what it feels like until you experience it. And I never want a single person to have to experience it again. But a lot of times is people will encounter something and come back to me and be like, oh my God, I had no clue how bad it would feel. I thought I would just, you know, I just put off a vibe that I wouldn't get it, or this person was with me, or this or that. And that's the hardest part of the work I do, is it's, you don't ever know when or where. Like, there might be environments where it's more likely, like women are more likely to be assaulted. However, it's GrooveSafe is gender neutral. It's really important to me that people know that everybody deserves respect, and this can happen to anybody by anybody in any place. Anyways, that moment, it was, I think, 2014. I didn't launch the GrooveSafe until 2017, but I started really paying closer attention to it. I went as far as wearing biker shorts under skirts, no matter what, at concerts. And I felt like I needed a Band-Aid from that. I would change sort of where I went and what I did and how I did it. I mean, and that was the most severe for me, but I get like my butt slapped all the time. And it still happens. Again, like I said before, that the spectrum of behaviors compared to people's tolerance and how it can affect them, it changes. But for me, every single time it happens, it brings me back to all of the other times. So it can be not that bad, quote, but you know, if it's just like a weird, I don't know, there's no quality, you know, no way to say what's better than the other, but I'm at the point where I'm just almost skittish because it's so uncomfortable. You're just left with these feelings and there's nothing really you can do about it. You can't undo it. So anyways, it's really hard, but that's why that's why I do this, is so that we can explain to people, A, we hear you, we see you, B, I understand, and then also try to teach people ways to kind of look out for each other, stuff like that.
Well, you mentioned that it still happens even today. Like, do you think GrooveSafe is, because I mean, you talked about almost wanting to stop going to see live music, this thing that you treasure so much, yet it's still happening today. Do you think GrooveSafe has kind of empowered you to feel more comfortable going back to concerts, to being at them again?
Yeah, I do. I think that I know, well, I've learned so much and I know that I've had a good impact, GrooveSafe's work in general, but also just the amount of conversations I've had with people so the idea is that I want to teach people ways to safely de-escalate stuff. Also that, like, you know, I can support people based on understanding exactly how it feels. I'm slowly getting more comfortable going back into the crowds, but based on the amount of stories I get constantly, it's still such a big problem. I know the work is changing things, but this is a human behavior that it goes back to the beginning of time. Like, it's really hard to expect it to have changed so quickly. But for me, I do know that I get more thanks for being here instead of what is this and why are you here? And the shift also where people come up to me and say, I wasn't going to come today, but because I'm alone, but knowing you guys are here, I know I'm okay. Like even if something happens or doesn't, just the idea of, you motivated me to come to the show today because I was alone and I was afraid. At least I know that you're here if I need a break or if something happens. I mean, we're not like a safe space in sense of like, if someone has an issue, please, come to the table. But we want to make the rest of the show safe, not just to have a hiding spot. And also, if you say safe space, then you become a vulnerable target, unfortunately. So we want to do the education and be there for people. I always have an extra chair, but it's not like a counseling center or anything. If someone was in true crisis, we know how to handle that by getting the appropriate, medical staff involved. But luckily, there hasn't been any severe crisis at tables to date. So I'm lucky for that. But the stories are lots and lots of stories happen. Like people tell me all sorts of stuff, So maybe I answered the question, but I keep trying to shift and teach people as we go. Because I know that it has had an impact. And I know that people are starting to talk about it more. And I think that's the number one thing that I'm hoping is that making the conversation easier and having people bring it up amongst their friend groups and hold their friends accountable and not be afraid to have a conversation that historically is difficult, is trauma based, but doesn't have to be hidden, I guess, anymore, maybe.
In my research, as I've become aware of Grief Safe and your mission, it was one of those like revelation moments of just my male privilege of like, I had no idea this happened at shows. I thought everybody got along. There was a drunk guy every now and then that started a fight. I had no idea this kind of just evil was happening at shows. And when I was researching this, got on Reddit and to see if people were talking about it there. And there was so many other male comments that were the exact same as mine. Like I had no idea. I was so unaware that this was happening. What is your encouragement to males as far as learning more about this, being more aware of these situations?
Yeah, so it's important for you to know that, again, as you've seen on your own, that you aren't alone in people not knowing it's going on. Mm-hmm. So I always say, don't blame yourself for not knowing beforehand, but now that you know, it's up to you to join in or to be an ally or whatever, because how would you know if your goal is to go to the show, have a good time and treat people with respect? You don't think about people who aren't getting treated with respect or are disrespecting people. So first of all, that is the thing that I get the most as I'm doing the awareness piece, is that people say, a lot of men say, no, I had no idea. I'm so sorry. They want to apologize. They want to talk about, their gender in this, but it's more than that. So anyone listening, you yourself don't, it's okay that you didn't know. And that is my goal. And my job is to spread the awareness. Change can only happen when people get that information. Once you know something, then that's when you can help. But what we encourage, there's something in this kind of field called bystander intervention. And the bystander effect is that in an environment with a lot of people, if something bad happens, the more people that are there, the less likely they are to step in because they think someone else is already doing something. And so idea of bystander intervention is what we call is just like groove safe de-escalation skills. Is that instead of being a passive bystander, you become an active bystander and you learn some skills that if you see something, say something, but then it's see something, say something, but what? And that what is what we're trying to teach. There's four main skills that we show at the table that I explain to people. It's see something, say something, but what? And then that way you want to de-escalate the situation and get the person in distress out of the situation. Because a lot of times people will say, hey, he's harassing you, she's harassing you, touching you. Why don't you stand up for yourself? And the problem is that your brain it releases a chemical. You go into a fight or flight kind of reaction. And the one that people don't totally know about is called freeze. And that is when you just shut down. You can't react. You can't really say anything. You can't stick up for yourself. So it becomes now our allies and our peers and the people around us and people like you, Lance, who say, wait, this is really happening. How do I help? And what you can do is learn the skills so that you can see it, so you can step in and de-escalate. I guess one of them, not to ramble, I think it's probably important to try to explain one of them. The easiest one that we teach in GrooveSafe and in the field in general is interrupting the moment. So if you see somebody who's in distress, you go to the person being harassed and ask them any question, cause any distraction, do anything that is, you know, safe and not gonna ignite anything. So you can say, hey, I tell everybody this, I'm gonna tell you too, is you could be at a fish show and they could be playing Bouncing Around the Room. You know the name of the song, they know the name of the song, but you still go and say, hey man, what's the name of this song again? And if they need you, they'll engage with you. If they don't, they'll answer your question and go back to what they were doing. So the best part about this skill is you can't be wrong. If you're interrupting a moment and you end up looking like just like a weirdo that like, you know, all right, noob, it's bouncing. Okay, move on. Like, that's fine. But the idea is that you didn't assume anything. You took some action that isn't going to cause harm at all. And again, it's based on how safe you feel in a moment. Cause one of them is also confront. Like, you can go right up to the harasser and be like, hey, what's going on here, man? Do you know her? Like, what's up? But like, I'm not going to walk up to, based on what I've been through, you know, my past experiences and being a shorter woman, I'm not going to walk up to a 6-foot man and be like, hey buddy, it's just, that isn't my style. Some women do that and they love doing that to, you know, call people out. So my point was, is that you can confront, but you want to keep your safety in mind. You also want to remember that you can re-traumatize the person that's in distress and being harassed by adding more violence or by escalating it, because you're trying to shift and de-escalate and stop the problem, not create more problems. Because you probably know is people will say, oh, just go knock his lights out. Mm-hmm. And unfortunately, that's adding more violence and you're now putting the victim in a second scenario. So we teach these things. They're, you know, I have them on, they're online, but there's little tips and skills that you can do if you see something. And the other one is check in, which you can check in with the person later. It can be 5 minutes, it can be 20 minutes, it can be at the end of the show or whatever. But you say, hey, I saw that. Are you okay? I noticed that guy was bothering you, or that person, whatever. My friends are over here. No pressure, but you're welcome to hang with us if you're, you know, blah, blah, blah. Mm-hmm. However, I'm not really good with those words, but the idea is that you can limit their long-term trauma by validating their experience. And also all these things are going to be ways for us to shift the culture. And if people start to realize that everyone's looking out for each other in the right ways, my goal is that the behaviors will lessen, because either we're teaching people that didn't understand it, or we're making that offender realize that it's going to be, you know, there's no tolerance for that. Now that we know about it, we're going to make sure that people realize that that's not going to be acceptable anymore.
No, that was really, really great. That's, I mean, because as I was prepping, I was thinking, you know, like, I'm 6 foot at best. I'm not that big of a guy. And if it's a 6'9" Arnold Schwarzenegger looking guy, that's going to be hard for me to go up and be like, hey man, don't do that. Like, I'll get beat up in a heartbeat. And, you know, like you were saying, that's two confrontations now. And as well as my own personal safety, not that their safety is any less valuable, but that's really good advice just for how to de-escalate a situation by asking something as silly or inviting them. That's fantastic. But my follow-up question to that is, you know, for a concert specifically, I'm looking at the stage. I'm enamored by the lights and the music. Many times, like during a jam, I'm going to have my eyes closed. I'm going to be in the moment. How do you stay aware of these situations? How do you pay attention for this? Because there's also the balance of, I want to be there for my fellow concert goers to help them in distress, but I also paid for the concert and I'd like to see that. What's the balance and how do you do that?
I think that the quick idea I had is that someone is going to have their eyes open. Like, you know what I mean? So I don't ever want people to think that they are on the clock, have to be a hero, always, you know, responsible to be fixing this stuff all the time. That is, it's not possible. And I don't want that. I don't ever want to always be on guard. Like, that wouldn't be the solution for me. But I think the idea is, if you see something, how to say something. Because I want everybody to close their eyes and get lost in the jam. Like, that's what I want to do. I haven't closed my eyes at a concert in years. And so I would, you know, I'd love that. I have a story, again, trigger warning. There was a woman who did have her eyes closed, swaying to a ballad, a slow song, and she felt someone kiss her. Like, her eyes were closed and someone kissed her on the mouth. Like, so that's, I know that's like a side little, that's a little bit of a tangent, but the point is you don't have to have your eyes open all the time. But if you see someone that looks uncomfortable, they probably are, and then you could be motivated to act in the right way. But I don't want people to ever think that this mission means that you also can't, put your guard down now that you have this information. So it's, you don't need to stay present. I don't want people to have to be on, like I said, like on call all the time. Mm-hmm. So you release yourself that immediately, but then also know that you're not going to prevent everything. But if somebody, is in a scenario, at least we'll know how to handle it. But the goal is for everybody to be able to get lost in the music. So, I mean, hopefully that was a little bit helpful.
No, that was really good.
Someone's going to see it. And especially if it's continued harassment, it won't go unnoticed if people know what to look for. I think that's another piece that's important.
And I think a certain level of just practicing basic kindness. When you were telling that story, the thing that came to my mind was I was at a Phish concert in 2017, I think. And I was just tired. It was during the second set. I was tired. I was in the lawn. I'd gone and sat down on one of the steps. And this lady came and sat down next to me and just put her arm on my shoulder and said, "Are you okay? Are you doing all right?" And I was like, "Yeah, I'm good. I'm just tired. I'm taking a break." And she's, "Okay, good deal. If you need anything, we're over here." And then she went back to her seat. Basic kindness goes a really long way. Like, nobody should get mad at you for expressing basic kindness in any situation.
That's right. You know, she did what we want people to look out for each other, because maybe you weren't okay. And then, maybe you did need something or whatever. But to take that 1 minute to check on you, like, that's amazing. I love that,
I think the overarching theme is that just be present, be there, be aware if something's happening. You can, like you're saying, you can't stop everything. So I think a good transition for that is, like, how have bands and artists and other concert patrons received your mission and your goals and what you've done?
For the most part, it is really positive feedback. Like I said earlier, the subject matter can be tough, so people tend to get a little nervous or shy or uncomfortable, and like, that makes sense. But as soon as you realize that we're just trying to change it and make it better, not come at it aggressively or put any blame anywhere, like, I'm really just trying to teach people about it and the problem and like ways to hold people accountable. And so from a fan perspective, a lot of times it's the reaction was like yours is, does this really happen? Of course, I say yes. And, how can we help? Well, here you can learn active bystander skills. You can also hold people accountable, like even stuff all the way down to like partying. I'm not prude. I don't think shows should be sober, but yes, drugs and alcohol obviously have an impact on people's behavior, but they're not the reason. Again, what I'm saying is that the accountability piece is control your buzz, be aware that you can party, but you don't have to be obliterated, be aware that, you can still have a really good time, but if your really good time is now putting someone else's safety at risk, then maybe you should reevaluate your really good time. Again, that sounds like I'm blaming, but I'm not. What I'm saying is that everyone has a friend like that. And it's up to us to say, like, "Hey, buddy, maybe you don't need 6 shots before the show tonight. I'll take one with you and I'll buy you beer in the venue. Like, let's just, you know, have some fun. But we don't have to, this isn't like, oh, I'm fine. Yeah, I can handle my buzz. Like, sure you can. But what you don't realize is that you're affecting other people. So those sorts of conversations are, you know, when you talk about people, how people are receiving this, it's up to me to give them ideas like that or ways to hold people accountable. And like I said, the subject matter, sometimes people, they know that they've made mistakes in their life. They know that they've not necessarily been violent criminals, you know what I mean? But everybody, as culture shifts and changes and we, you know, marginalized humans are starting to speak up a little bit more. If it feels like some people feel threatened and they don't have to, because I don't want to talk about what you did. I want to talk about how you can be a part of fixing it and whatever. So there are times where I feel a little pushback from emotionally, like from bands and things like that. And I think it's only because it's uncomfortable and people are afraid of what other people are going to think if they start to talk about something like this, either from either know somebody, you might have made a mistake, or also do people really want to deal with this? And the thing is I don't want you to have to deal with anything. I just want people to learn and understand. Like I said, it's not aggressive. So I'll meet you where you are. But overall, it's been really positive because people do want to have a good environment at their shows. If you're talking about the bands themselves, they want that the place in general to be welcoming and not to expose it, but then also to have let people get back to having a good time. So that can happen with prevention. It can happen with the skills we talked about. But the bands do have a really, really influential voice because people listen to their idols. They listen to people. They listen to people that they look up to. So they actually have the most influence when it comes to helping GrooveSafe in the movement because they can stand against it. And, you know, they can say, hey, there's no tolerance for that at our shows. Learn the skills. Here's the problem, you know, like I train the bands too, because they need to realize that anybody could be asked about this at any time. And you want to make sure you have the right language and the right responses. Because a lot of what they call victim blaming is when people are misinformed. I don't like the term, but they're misinformed, where your immediate response is to try to find fault in the person who experienced something bad. Like, what are you wearing? Were you drunk? You know, it doesn't seem that bad. It's sort of conditioned into us to try to find a reason why someone would hurt someone, where we need to shift the perspective to say, like, are you okay? What do you need? I'm sorry that happened. And then have the influence that you have as the band. But again, I think like what you asked was about how it's received, and it's difficult, but it's positive, because especially for people who've experienced it, it's like, oh my God, thank God. Thank God someone's saying, I was too afraid to speak up. Or now that you guys talk about it, we can too. And a lot of times I don't mind being the voice for it, because there are people who are not ready to tell their story. And that's totally okay too. But I think in general, it's tough, but it's happening. It's changing. It's working. And every single conversation I have is one towards the goal, I guess. So and sometimes I get really, really intense things that people come at me. Oh, you're just some whoop that is funding tour for free. Like, no,
not at all.
I don't like talking about this. Do you guys want, you know, like, it'd be great if you just fixed it. I don't, you know, it's not fun to talk about people getting hurt. So, you know, the microaggressions can be pretty intense too.
Well, that's one of the best pieces of advice that I read on your platforms and that you were putting out there was holding your friends accountable. That's the best way we can kind of start to do this is, you know, if it's some random stranger comes up and starts confronting you, it's a little different than if your friend for 15, 20 years that you went to college with and you grew up with is like, hey man, at the show you did something and it was really inappropriate. I don't think you should do that again. That was a really big thing for me, thinking of like how you can approach people, how you can make this situation better. Can you talk about that a little bit?
Yeah. And again, like I'm not a guy and I don't have that, the buddy, I don't have that perspective. But I think that what we said about holding each other accountable is I was thinking about two things. So one is being brave enough to bring it up. And then it's also being brave enough to receive it. So if somebody does tell you, hey, you kind of acted like a jerk, try to take it. I don't know the right word, but like, try to receive it with grace, you know, where if someone's trying to have a conversation with you about something or mistake, it doesn't necessarily mean that you're bad and wrong, especially when it has to do with the subject. Everybody can learn. Everybody can change. And like I said, on the top, once you know something, then it's your kind of responsibility to make the changes, but you can't know what you don't know. And like, don't blame yourself for that. But I think that it probably is harder to have conversations with people you're closer to because, you know, you don't want them to think that their reactions are like you're betraying them or something. But I think that it does go both ways with both receiving it and giving the information, but just having these conversations. And I think start slow would be my advice. And don't go at someone hard being like, this, you did this, this, and this. Like, just be like, hey, I noticed that the past couple of shows you got like really drunk. Like, you know, do you think, you know, but you can't tell them once they've been drinking, and you don't want to confront them in front of other people, because then the defense is, it's very hard. It's like a really hard thing to do. And you can even use group safe to be like, hey, I heard about this thing. Have you heard about it? Like, you don't have to come right at someone. Just bring up the conversation, just the topic, and see their reaction. Some people, like I told you, they are not ready to receive this information. And I think that everybody can come around, but I would take it more as a test the waters. And I don't know if that's good advice or not, but I think that would be successful, is to, hey, did you hear about this thing? You know, did you know that people get groped at shows all the time? And I've never seen it, you know, or I think it's starting the conversation before you're holding people accountable. It's bringing up the topic, being able to kind of talk about stuff that's pretty tough.
As we close, aside from, you know, general awareness and learning and growing, how can people get involved with GrooveSafe? What are some options for them to get plugged in with you guys?
Well, obviously, like we talked about, learning the skills that for the general person who is just, you know, a nice person that just wants to go to the show, and learning the skills to help your peers is really important. But we are a nonprofit, so we're 501c3 tax exempt, recognized as a charitable organization. So every dollar helps us, because we are, you know, we are a nonprofit. So on our website, you can donate. That's the easiest way to help. Second is getting involved with our organization in general. We do lots of shows where we need volunteers. We are growing in a way where we do need, you know, professionals, like skills, you know, if it's grant writers to someone that's really good at spreadsheets or something, like there's ways that you can get involved to help us grow that are, you know, are more like admin based, I guess. But so the steps would be donating, offering volunteer time in either shows or in professional capacity. Talking to your friends about the problem, like we said before, is having the conversation is going to be the beginning of making a difference. And follow socials. It's the @ GrooveSafe on everything. Instagram is @GrooveSafe_. But following, liking, and engaging in posts get them seen by more people. You have to break through this algorithm. It's a big challenge for me. And so I think that just really getting involved in whatever way you can, and remembering that if this subject is really hard for you, that it's okay, and take your time with it. But we are doing our best to like educate bands and venues and our peers, you know, like I can't wait to get back out there and not have to feel like this, you know. And thank you for everybody who has ever given me any time, Lance, you, and you know, Stu's been doing tons of volunteering for me, and just, I have a lot of people doing some really great stuff. So I'm really grateful too, because it was tough to get going. And I'm glad that I have support, because it, you know, I get tired too. It's hard, sure. But you know, GrooveSafe.org has pretty much everything that you need. And we're always open for emails and stuff like that. Like I welcome ideas as well as, you know, contributions, because it's a new field. It's a new movement. It's new territory. So you know, there's definitely things I haven't thought of that I just welcome people to join in, you know?
Yeah. Well, Ashley, this was a sobering conversation, but it was incredibly enlightening. And I'm so grateful that you took the time out of your day to speak with me and bring this awareness to people. Thank you so much.
Yeah, I'm really glad to have had the chance and good to meet you. And hope that people learn something. But I'm happy to do the work.
Thanks for listening to another episode of Yesterday's Concert. Thoughts? Similar experiences? Disagree? Let us know on Twitter, Instagram, and even TikTok. Or you can email us at info@yesterdaysconcert.com. If you're feeling kind, give us a review on Apple Podcasts. Otherwise, until next time, give us a subscribe, check out our website, yesterdaysconcert.com, and most importantly, take care of your shoes.
It's NFL draft season, and that means it's time to start thinking about fantasy football. FantasyPoints.com features industry-leading experts and prognosticators using proprietary hand-charted data to help you score more fantasy points. FantasyPoints.com is the place to go for whatever kind of fantasy football you play. Whether you play fantasy football, daily fantasy sports, or do a little bit of everything, Fantasy Points has the meticulously researched content to guide you to victory. And why wait for the fall? Fantasy Points also covers the new spring football league, the UFL. Join the guru, John Hansen, Scott Barrett, Joe Dolan, and other massive names in the fantasy football universe with an exclusive offer. Use code Pantheon for 15% off any Fantasy Points package, including the all-in package, with access to every article, tool, and data nugget that Fantasy Points has to offer. That's FantasyPoints.com and code Pantheon for 15% off at Fantasy Points. FantasyPoints.com, code Pantheon. Score more fantasy points.